To get the Crime Writers on After Show right now, go to patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and this is Crime Writers On. Crime Writers On is the original true crime review podcast that digs into true crime, pop culture, other podcasts. And on this episode, what does a multimillionaire do when he goes on the run as a murder suspect? He takes a documentary crew to follow him. We'll review the Netflix documentary, Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee. Joining me to get that done and more is true crime author, TV journalist, and host of the These Are Their Stories podcast, my husband and love of my life, Kevin Flynn. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Rebecca.
Also with us is private investigator, certified pet detective, resident cat lady, and author of the upcoming The Final Curtain, the second book in the Piper Green series, Lara Bricker. Hello, Lara.
Hello, Rebecca. Oh my gosh, what do I have for you here?
There it is.
Oh, it's a new copy of The Final Curtain.
Very
it's
nice.
An advance review copy.
Very
also
nice.
Known as an ARC.
I can't wait to get my signed
copy. For the literary insiders.
Yes, I can't wait to get my signed copy in the mail.
I hope the book maven is listening again and wants a copy of your, wants an ARC.
Yes.
And finally, our resident Doubting Thomas, the author of the City Trilogy of Novels, host of the Strange Arrivals podcast, and our Patreon Deep Dive Book Club podcast host, Toby Ball. Hello, Toby.
Hey, Rebecca.
So, Toby, I just want to let you know I'm so excited to be a panelist on an upcoming episode of the Deep Dive Book Club podcast. I am reading my book.
Good.
I'm doing my homework.
It's a good book, right?
Very good. It's called The Tall Man by Chloe Hooper. And those of you who would like to listen to the next episode of The Deep Dive, I really recommend it. It's super good so far. And that man is, in fact, very tall.
It's extremely tall. Although you have to do the you have to convert it from centimeters when you're reading the when you're reading the book.
Yeah. Although in my book, it just says he's 6'7". Maybe I just got a different edition than you did.
Maybe they translated at one point. I think he was like described as being 2 meters tall. And I was like, 2 meters. So that's, you know.
All right. So, Kevin, what is coming up on next Monday's podcast?
Next Monday, we're going to be talking about the podcast Witnessed Mystic Mother.
Kevin, is that a cult podcast?
It is.
All right.
It's a sex cult podcast.
You know, I love
my
me
favorite
a cult.
Kind.
It's lady-oriented sex club.
Ladies. Yeah, yeah. A lady cult.
Guess who comes first?
Oh, stop it.
What? I'm just saying.
Oh, that's what she said. All right. I think we should just get to the content and stop it with
wash
you.
Wash it off for a fit. Right, okay.
Let's etch a sketch that right out of our brains. I'm going to go ahead and drop that first clip right now.
My decisions were the same decisions any average human would make. What you would have done in the same circumstances, I believe, sir.
John McAfee made hundreds of millions of dollars on his ubiquitous antivirus software and retired to Belize. But after his neighbor was murdered in 2012, McAfee went on the run. Rather than keep a low profile, he let a camera crew film his every move.
All right.
Oh, fuck.
Shit.
What?
Nothing.
There can't be no fuck.
No, I'm good.
Passport.
Shit, I don't have mine.
McAfee uses his unscrupulous methods and considerable wealth to escape his predicament in Central America. But when he gets into trouble in the U.S., a paranoid, drug-addled, and heavily armed McAfee invites cameras on his luxury yacht as he takes to the sea to avoid capture.
You take your chances when you leave national waters. We're carrying armaments. We would not be easy prey. This boat itself has got 8 layers of fiberglass, 3 layers of Kevlar. So, I mean, the hull itself is virtually bulletproof.
The Netflix documentary, Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee, brings us inside the businessman's never-ending flight from justice through jungles, foreign court systems, and the high seas. It documents his downward spiral while on the lam and asks questions about his controversial death. Spoiler alert, we are going to be talking about plot points from Running with the Devil. So if you want to remain spoiler free, go to the estimated time code in our show notes to hear our thumbs up or thumbs down reviews. Additional note, I am the host of Netflix's podcast, You Can't Make This Up, but we did not cover this documentary and that hosting job has not influenced my review of this film. Laura Bricker.
Mm-hmm.
How much Just for Men for Beards did John McAfee take on the run with him? That is my first question. What do you think?
Well, a lot. I kind of wish I was Robert, the cameraman in the overalls, and Rocco, the vice reporter, who got to go on the run with him.
Why is that?
What an adventure. this was like the Legend of Cocaine Island computer software version.
Yeah.
It was nuts. I don't even know how to make sense of this because it was like watching an egomaniac spiraling into complete mental illness / drug addiction / I don't even know what. And it just kept going on and on and on. But yeah, I mean, it was something.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could relate to about McAfee, and I'm not saying murdering somebody is okay. When I heard it was about somebody killing his dogs, I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But I wish I had known more about that murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I felt like there was definitely, it was sort of like the stream of consciousness sort of following McAfee. And I'm like, but I want a little more about the crime that led up to this.
Yeah, kind of a dropped thread in the documentary. So, Toby, what do you think about what this film is about? Because like we were just saying, they kind of drop the thread about the murder and then it just becomes sort of a following a man who's a legend in his own mind, maybe kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's legitimately some pretty crazy stuff that happens in Belize and Guatemala. Like, I think there's no question that some of that's harrowing. There's also some stuff like, well, there's bad guys coming and there's good guys coming. And if the good guys get here first, we're fine. If the bad guys come here, it's going to be a long day for us. And it's like, who are these bad guys? Like, how do you know this? It's just you're spending a lot of time like taking his word for things. When they do get to Guatemala, you do see he gets into this kind of situation and he fakes his heart attack. My sense is he just paid people off and sort of
made
it in this big high profile way to like to enhance his myth. There's no goods, right? I mean, it's just like he's saying, I hacked into the KGB and the CIA and the FBI and, you know, I did this and I did that. And I did the other thing. And, you know, they're dangerous people after me. We got to get out of Bermuda with all the guns we have left. And it's like, is there any evidence at all that this happens other than you raving like a lunatic?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is no. So, I kind of took this as, with the exception of what was going on in Guatemala, is really he's brought these guys along to kind of make a documentary, making it look like he's got this like insane life, which he kind of does, but it's insane because of drug abuse and guns, not because he's like an international outlaw fleeing from the Sinaloa cartel.
Wait, Toby, you mean you don't like take a gun every time you shower in the shower with you?
Well, I do. But I live in Durham, so
yeah,
it's tough.
So, Kevin, what do you think of this idea that he just his first thought when all this happened was, let's get a camera crew here. Let's get these reporters from Vice. And instead of like having them do a story, let's actually like get them as a crew and bring them along with me.
Yeah, I feel like that was missing because I do think it's important context as far as, I mean, I wasn't even clear that these guys were from Vice until like maybe 15 minutes into it, till they kind of said this is where we're filing, or somebody said we're from Vice. We just all of a sudden see Rocco at the airport like, we're going on an adventure, this is gonna be really great. Well, you know, what is McAfee's plan that he's like, we're gonna get out of the country, but first I'm going to summon a film crew, see if they want to follow me, pick them up at the airport. You know, with this very cool, like, James Bond way of passing a signal.
I'm supposed to wear a blue scarf around my neck. Lots of cabs will come up and they'll say, do you want to ride, sir? Do you want to ride, sir? But eventually someone's going to go up and say, I'm sorry, I'm late. And that's whose car we get into.
So it's a little disorienting. And I think that's what they're trying to achieve. They want it to be a little disorienting because jumping into this, him going on the run, is disorienting. So I think that, well, I do feel we need to be anchored a little bit in what is happening a little more. I think that that's the idea, where all of a sudden we're in the van and he's looking for his passport and we're going to take a little boat and go across the ocean to a whole other country and sneak in there. And, you know, thank God his young girlfriend's uncle is the attorney general or some stupid shit like that.
One of the things that kept occurring to me, Kevin, is that these documentarians, the photographer Robert, Mr. Hoveralls, and the Vice dudes, they're also kind of unreliable narrators because they end up sort of falling in love either with their own story or the story they missed, or with McAfee in Mr. Hoveralls' case, right?
I didn't think of it that
way. So they're sort of seeing this through this lens of this very exciting memory they have. At the same time, they're telling us this story. So sort of objectivity here is kind of out the window. I mean, well, they're also remembering this grand adventure that they
had. Yeah, when you're part of it, it's hard to all of a sudden maintain that kind of objectivity. I think Rocco is probably a little more sober-eyed about what his experience was as opposed to Robert, who says, fuck it, yeah, I'm in for another ride. Let's get on a boat and just, you know. At least Rocco is like, you know, he was there for a story and he's pissed that he never got to file the story. Robert's like, well, you know, I wanted to like work on this farm with my dog and my overalls. And then he said, let's go for a ride. I got a whole bunch of coke and some guns and the Wolf of Wall Street's yacht. So let's just live on the high seas like coked up pirates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's some bath salts. Oh my God. Yeah.
Bath salts.
Well, you know who was more reliable of the people that was it was Alex, the ghostwriter.
Right.
I actually liked him. Like, he's like, yeah, he might be a murderer, but I really love a good story. But then at the end, he's the one that had like the quote of the entire documentary, I think, that was like, John was the virus.
John was the virus. Has he ruined people's lives? Yes. But I also saw the goodness in John, the things that he's done to help people. I wanted to write that story.
I appreciated him because I could relate to him. I'm like, yeah, I love a good story. But also, this guy's full of shit and he's like bonkers. But it was like crazy also how they found him and he just showed up. And like that scene where he's describing his first interaction with McAfee and he's like walking around. And he's like, oh, you're the writer. Do you want some like 12-year scotch or whatever? And then it's like literally something
out of. What are you drinking?
Yeah, it's like so.
Your scotch is what I'm drinking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, like Robert, and even in the end, back to him, overalls Robert, like he at the end actually was like, yeah, actually, like, he was my friend. So he definitely crossed the line.
I thought the best narrators in this film were McAfee's ex-girlfriends, frankly.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they have nothing to gain. They're not in any way exalting their experiences with him. They're just saying what happened when they were with him. In the film, when you see them as passengers in the car, they're basically objects that he's carrying along for the ride. And then they're just saying what happened when they were with him. They didn't seem to be particularly enjoying the adventure as it was happening.
But now the second one, though, what's her name? Janice, the one who was the sex worker. Janice starts out being like, hey, it was better than being a sex worker. I thought, hey, I'm along. Then she allegedly actually falls in love with him. And now she's like, oh, he was murdered. And like, she's like, he didn't commit suicide. And she's like taking on his case. So she was a little harder for me to figure out than the first girl, the one who was so young, Sam, that we see sitting out on the beach talking about how she was so young and vulnerable. And they were very interesting because they were the ones who were spending the most time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a more personal way, obviously.
Yeah. So, Toby, if you were that cameraman, would you have jumped on that yacht with all of the guns, drugs, and booze?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Just a Tuesday at Toby Ball's house.
Fucking strap it up. Like, those scenes are, like, a little difficult to watch because it is just these people in this drug haze. Like, they think there might be people hiding in, like, the hull of the boat. So they're, like, peering down there with guns and flashlights. And, you know, he's got a lot of like these pretty, you know, cleverly lit, you know, shots of John. And he looks like all like sketched out. But then there's one where he's like, I think he's lying on a mattress, like typing on his computer or something. And his legs are just vibrating. And it's like, fuck, man.
Daddy, you got the virus.
You are not in good shape. Like you said before, it's like alcohol and drugs and guns. And just a guy who's just completely not lucid, kind of in charge of everything and paranoid. And and all this, but just has so much freaking money that, you know, other than the threats that are in his head, like, he can basically buy his way out of anything. It's harrowing. I mean, that whole part is harrowing. And the most understandable part of the entire documentary was when that guy was like, he walks off. He's like, fuck it. I am out of here. I got into a cab. I said, take me to the airport. And I flew home. It's like, yeah, that's the first good decision that's happened for anybody in this entire documentary. Do we even know how those people got out of that hotel? Like, at the beginning, when they're in that hotel in Guatemala and they're like, the federales can't come in here. We're safe while we're here. And then it's like 5 years later. Are those guys, like, what happened? What happened? How'd you get home?
A time machine.
Toby, it's a grand adventure.
I guess that's what it is.
You got to drink 12-year scotch to hear that story, Toby.
All right, so Kevin, here we are in the business section.
I can't even catch my breath.
What have we got going on our Patreon right now, Kevin?
Well, we have the Crime Writers On After Show. Toby Ball led us in a discussion about our writing origins.
Our literary beginnings.
The very beginning. It's an origin story about origin stories. We have a new episode of Leave It to Bricker at Patreon. Lara has been going deep, kind of. Mm-hmm. There was a mysterious hole discovered in Quaint AF... Exeter, New Hampshire. What was it?
Well, I was hoping it was like the catacombs of Exeter and that there might be like skeletons, but you'll have to listen to Leave It to Bricker to find out what it was. Unfortunately, there's this pesky thing called OSHA, so they wouldn't let me go down in the hole, but I got pretty close.
Kevin, what else we've got going on our Patreon?
Well, we've got 301 exclusive podcast episodes there. Go to patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia, just like it says at the beginning of the episode, and you can get all that, including Mary with Podcast and Toby Ball's Deep Dive Book Club podcast. Also out there, yesterday we dropped the latest episode of These Are Their Stories. We were joined again by our friend Ronald Young Jr.
Yay!
Oh, I love him.
We talked about this SVU episode in which you'll remember this scene if you're a fan, where Sharon Lawrence gets up on the interrogation table and spreads her legs in Stabler's face.
That's right. It's really weird. It's real weird.
Says, here's the...
No, she doesn't say
that. No, she doesn't say it. She's thinking it, though.
No, she's not. And I'm going to fucking bleep that out because that's gross.
Jesus Christ.
Look at poor Toby. He's going to have some therapy after this.
Like, I want to talk about
that.
Can
I just make a quick plug for Ronald? I started listening to his podcast, Leaving the Theater. It is so good. He reviews movies with a friend as they are walking out of the theater. So he's watched a bunch of movies that I am too scared to see. And, like, I didn't have to because he reviews them as he's walking out of the theater. It's great.
The best thing is, and Lara, you will remember this from when Toby was away and we had Ronald on. We were talking about The Dropout. He said that Amanda Seyfried should win the Oscar for television, which I pointed out is called the Emmys. We had Ronald on minutes after that, and we got to break the news to him. Have a listen.
This is, for me, this is a career-making role for her. After this, we should see her in, like, critically acclaimed things after this. If we, like, if you could get an Oscar for a television show, she should be the first one to at least be nominated, because there's stuff
you
she's
can.
Doing
You can, it's called
here.
An Emmy. We up? Have some breaking news just for you.
What?
Amanda Seyfried has won the Oscar for television.
Yo, are you serious? That's amazing.
You called it.
Wow, I love that. Okay.
Lastly, just want to let you know two things. Rebecca and I are going to be in Columbus, Ohio on September 30th and October 1st and 2nd for Obsessed Fest with a whole bunch of great true crime luminaries, Patrick Hines, Jillian Pensavale, Amber Hunt, Rabia Chaudhry, Payne Lindsay, the guys from Generation Y. It's going to be really great. And lastly, I'm going to make a little request here. If you can, could you help me with my Walk a Mile in Her Shoes? Again, this year I'm going to be doing this fundraiser for the Central New Hampshire Crisis Center. This is a emergency center for women in town. And what we do is I put on a pair of high heel shoes and a bunch of guys like me go and figuratively walk a mile in her shoes to raise awareness for the issues that the women in the community face, and that for guys, we have to be part of the solution too. And this is a way to, it's performative, but it's a symbol of like starting to think about what happens with all the members in the community and, you know, the way that we can help be part of the solution.
It's a shelter for women who are victims of domestic violence. We should be very clear. It is a wonderful, wonderful organization.
What did I imply?
No, you didn't imply anything. You didn't say what they do.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a crisis center, you know? Oh, okay, sure. I see. Anyway, if you'd like to donate, you can do that by finding my link. Just go to crimewriterson.com right on the homepage. It'll take you to where you can sponsor me. That's going to be happening on October 5th.
All right. So, Kevin, before we wrap up the business section, do we have any Patreon patron saints of the week this week?
Yeah, our Patreon patron saints are Aaron Casey and Kathy Rowe.
Oh,
bless you.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you guys for being great patrons, great members of our Crime Writers On community. I see you there in our group. And thank you to everybody for listening, being part of our Patreon community or not. And thus ends the business section.
Business section.
I'm going to go ahead and fade that music out.
Yeah, why don't you fade that music out?
Right now. All right, so Kevin, before we get back on the boat,
yeah,
let's talk about the sideways turn into John McAfee's political career.
Yeah, okay, here's the part, and I think you guys kind of alluded to it. It's kind of unclear how he goes from fake heart attack to, you know, running. He's in trouble for murder, potentially in Belize. And now all of a sudden he's back in the U.S. and he's running for president and the nomination for the Libertarian Party. And I'm like, how did the other thing resolve? There's still criminal charge? How did he get out of that? How did he get out of the country when Rocco and Robert were, you know, trying to flee the federales? So that was a big hole there sort of in the middle. Like, what was going on? They didn't even do something like, okay, we see him running for president. Got it. We know he doesn't become president. But they don't sort of ever acknowledge.
Are we sure he didn't become president?
He didn't become president. But they don't even acknowledge, like, you know, what happened with the nomination? How many votes did they get? They didn't even, like, sort of do a single frame to close that anecdote, right? A lot of this stuff is left open because now we're jumping to the next thing. And all of a sudden he's in a wig, you know, and then.
That was the best scene.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Are you an undercover boss?
Yeah.
No, I'm John McAfee. They're like, oh.
Yeah, why? Are you going to be on Undercover Boss?
Am I going to be what?
Undercover Boss?
No, ma'am, it's going to be far worse than that. You'll say, that man was in my shop. I promise you. In a week from now, you're going, that man was in my shop.
You're not going to get in trouble, are you?
I'm in trouble. Always in trouble.
There were so many moments in this documentary where John McAfee would be talking to the camera, and I kept turning to Kevin. I was like, is that an actor playing John McAfee? And Kevin was like, no, that's also John McAfee.
Yeah.
Like, he just had this, it's not like he looked particularly different. He would just make these weird tiny changes to his appearance, like the Just for Men for beards, like a weird like change in haircut, like even just a facial expression or the way he was standing in the light would just like shadow his face in a certain way. He's just a very like not a chameleon quite.
But you know what it is?
What?
Bath salts.
Bath salts. It's all about the salts.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Hell of a drug. Charlie Murphy.
Toby, what did you think of this foray into politics by John McAfee?
You can be fucking anybody and run for the Libertarian. Yeah. Like that. I think the guy, like one of the first guys who ever followed me on Twitter, I don't know why, was this guy who's really into living forever, transhumanism. And he ran like 8 years ago as the Transhumanist Party candidate. But then I think I don't know if he actually was the Libertarian Party nominee or he was just like very competitive for it. But like literally he's a transhumanist. Like he wants to implant his brain into a computer so he never actually dies. And it's like, what is this? How does this in any way have anything to do with libertarianism?
It's changed. What libertarianism means has definitely evolved.
It's
in the
totally
last 10
fucking
years.
Wacky. Anyway, living in a state where the libertarians like had grand plans on taking over. Instead, they're just trying to fuck up one of our like small ski hills, but
they also have grand plans to take over, and it has worked. They have also had the Speaker of the House, who is also a Libertarian here in our state.
Yes, I don't pay that much attention.
Yes, but we also have. I mean, Libertarians. The definition, if anyone doesn't know, in New Hampshire has definitely transmogrified. We have many Libertarians here who are actually under the banner of Republican politicians, but the current nominee for the Libertarian candidate for governorship in New Hampshire, the platform on which he's running is quote, cameras in classrooms. So
you've already given more context for libertarianism in this discussion than that documentary did when we see him and John Stossel.
John Stossel, Jesus Christ.
At some debate, you know?
Yeah.
Where they're already making jokes about the fact that he's wanted for murder and police and hasn't paid his income tax.
And then Correct. That guy kisses him. One of the other candidates goes over and plants a big wet one on his cheek.
It was the kiss
that?
Of death, Toby. It was the kiss of death.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Toby has thoughts about the murder in Belize. I mean, you, Toby, also have questions about why that wasn't wrapped up, but you also have questions about why that guy was always walking around with a parrot. And it was...
He wants to be a pirate, yeah. Apparently.
I know who did it. Wait.
Laura, the man was murdered. Have some sensitivity.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. The statute of limitations is up. This is a very strange crime.
Don't victim blame strange rich people.
The whole thing is weird, is that the guy wants to be able to walk around on the beach with a parrot on his shoulder so much that he's willing to poison his neighbor's dog.
Yes.
And his neighbor, who he must know, is armed to the teeth. Because he's shooting his guns off all the time. And he's got to know that he's going to be the guy who's going to be the suspect. Because he's a guy who doesn't like the dogs. I don't understand. Just like leave your parrot at home.
It's a very poorly thought out crime.
Is it that big a deal?
It's like Kevin, remember the horse lady who used to scream at people?
Yeah.
So, there's a lady who used to walk her horse down the street in our old neighborhood. And if you were outside or outside with your dog, even if your dog was on the leash, she would scream at you because her horse was afraid of dogs. And it's like, listen, lady, this is a residential neighborhood and you have chosen to ride your horse.
Any cars who would go
by. In front
by.
Of her, she would yell at drivers. She would yell at people and I was like, someday she's going to bring a gun and shoot our dog. But
wow.
Yeah, it was wild. And that's what I kept thinking about. This is the horse lady situation.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like I'm victim blaming because obviously you don't deserve.
It wasn't the horse's fault and it wasn't the parrot's fault.
To die for that stuff, but no. it just seems, yeah, I don't know. It seems like the wrong guy to pick a fight with necessarily.
Yeah.
You know that parrot's still alive.
Yeah, the parrot's lived to be 80 years old.
Yeah. I watched Only Murders in the Building.
So, Kevin, let's just get back to the boat really quick, because I know you had questions about how that was all going to work.
Yeah, how bad do you think it smelled on that boat?
Not good.
I don't know.
Those saturated rugs that they showed, it's going to mildew. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot of Lysol and Febreze. Yeah, I mean, one of the things we also didn't get is sort of, I mean, we see McAfee pull out a big wad of $100 bills in U.S. currency. And I guess that's supposed to imply this is how the whole thing is working. He's just pulling cash out of his pocket. But I'm okay, he's fleeing the IRS. So
was he in the Bahamas? That's
yeah, he's going from island to island. And he went to one island and they confiscated his gun. So where has he been the last couple of months? Just in the middle of the ocean? Where is he getting the gas? Where are they getting new food? Where are they getting more of their bath salts?
Yeah.
You know, they got to pull into some port somewhere. And the logistics of all that.
Well, there are a lot of Bahamas.
There are a lot of Bahamas.
Yes,
they had a shitload of bath salts too. That was a big ass. That was a gallon bag of bath salts.
Yeah. Yeah. I was
and
really?
He was when he was in the room and the bedroom after they talked about that, and he was on the bed and he was just
yeah.
I was really worried that we were going to have a face chewing scene.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, I really was, because we all know bath salts. It was on my list when the kids were little and I was the seven drugs you're never allowed to try once. Bath salts.
Bath salts.
Some of them were on the list because no one ever does them once. Bath salts on the list because you might accidentally eat somebody's face. Remember that story?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yes.
So that was a Florida story.
Yes, it was not great. Okay, so I, for one, am a huge believer in the fact that John McAfee could have faked his death. Here is why.
Yeah.
I did a story on the talk show that I used to work for about the really unbelievable commonness of the rich people faking their death industry. There's a really interesting book called Playing Dead, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud. It came out in about 2016. The author is Elizabeth Greenwood. There's a really interesting NPR interview with her in which she actually went through the process of faking her own death in writing the book. It is super easy to do. You don't have to be that rich to do it. There's like an insurance adjuster from Indiana who did it successfully. Not successfully because we know about it, but a lot of people do it. And at the end of this interview, they basically intimate, because one of his ex-girlfriends says that he called her and said, do you want to join me?
2 weeks ago, after his death, I got a call from Texas. It's me, John. I paid off people to pretend that I am dead, but I am not dead. And there are only 3 persons in this world that knows that I'm still alive.
He may or may not have done this, but I believe that it could have happened. Laura Bricker, what do you think?
You know, I go back and forth on this. I mean, I think it's really interesting. We had that cryptocurrency podcast we listened to where the person from,
it was an exit scam. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the thing. Like, if you want to like fake your death, you go to India, because like everybody goes to India to fake their death. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. So I mean, when you hear the end, I'm like, this, first of all, was a perfect ending for this documentary. You know, that character, the girlfriend, Sam, very interesting. But I guess where I think like it's not, I don't think he could have faked his death, is because he was such a narcissist. He was such an egomaniac that like, do you really think he could go underground and shut up and turn off this mania that he had going on of everybody chasing him and everybody out to get him? Like, I guess based on everything I saw of him, I have a hard time believing that he could just quietly fade off into the distance, because that was just not the way that he operated. He enjoyed the excitement. He enjoyed the attention from being on the run. And maybe he did. And what was he like, living in Texas? Now he's going to be a cowboy? Giddy up, John McAfee. I don't know.
That's a good point. I mean, my thinking was maybe he faked his death and then actually also died.
That could happen.
That you know, he was doing so many drugs.
Yeah,
you know?
He's doing a shitload of drugs. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Do you know what happened to his body?
No.
Apparently, it's, quote, still in the morgue, and the government won't turn the body over to his widow.
Really?
So I am wondering, does that make sense?
Yeah, what morgue is this? What country is this?
Wasn't he in Spain?
Spain.
Yeah. This widow wants the body, and they're not giving it to him, and that makes me suspicious as hell.
That's very
strange. It's so fishy, it comes with a side of chips and mayonnaise.
Very strange.
Kevin.
Isn't that one of the... Fox News dickhead said when he's talking about the death. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in this case, I believe that he would attempt that he would pay somebody off. But Laura, you're right. I don't see how long he could live on a low profile and maintain a life, you know, in hiding, because his idea of hiding 2 other times was to take a camera crew and flash a lot of money around. Like, we're going to hiding. We're going to the Four Seasons in Guatemala City. And nobody will find us there. And then we'll have a press conference. And his death comes right after, you know, the court says, we are going to extradite you to the U.S.
But I have a question.
And we're going to do yoga.
I have a question, though. He is inflating his own sense of self-importance and who's actually watching him, right?
Yeah, sure.
So what if
we all do.
What if he is actually alive? And he still is being like a super narcissistic dickhead somewhere, sitting on some beach, telling everybody grand stories, but saying his name is like John Smith.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking cares about John McAfee, really. He just thinks
they do. Every time I turn my computer on, that fucking alert comes on saying, you have 30 days to
pay.
Yeah.
Like holding your credit card number hostage.
You're the virus, McAfee. You're the virus. Can I get you off my computer?
Toby, thoughts? Yes or no? Dead or alive? John McAfee, thoughts?
I don't really care. But
yeah, okay. Yeah, good answer. Best answer.
It's like, he's a narcissist, but he's also just doing tons and tons and tons of drugs. And I think when you do tons and tons and tons of drugs, that can outweigh a lot of other parts of your personality. So I don't know.
All right, well, let's do what we do. Let's let our listeners know, should they check out Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee? It's on Netflix. Laura Bricker, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was really, this is like the bonkers sort of companion to like The Legend of Cocaine Island, but it is from the computer tech world. And it was sort of like this sort of swashbuckling, crazy adventure on the high seas with this guy going on the run, things you can't believe are true. And I think even in the beginning of this, they said, it's so crazy, it has to be true. And so there was definitely sort of this like stream of consciousness approach with this, where there were times I would have liked a little more context, a little more background, but it was just kind of crazy and entertaining. And, you know, I am curious to see where this story goes next, because you do have the one wife who is allegedly pursuing some things. So may not be dead. But yeah, it was just kind of crazy. So I sat down, I watched it, I went, huh, that was bonkers. So if nothing else, that's why you should watch it.
What do you think, Toby Ball?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I felt it was really disjointed, you know? It just felt like they had, like, pieces of different parts of his life, which they didn't really try very hard to connect. And so you kind of get a piece of the whole Belize-Guatemala thing, and then you get a piece of, you know, him working with that writer, and then you get a piece of the thing on the yacht, and then you get some background on him and like what his ultimate fate is. But it just kind of seems like it's almost like, I think when you're doing like surveying, it's like a sample of convenience, right? You happen to have stuff on these little places, so you just, that's what you make into your movie, and you try and fill in a little bit rather than giving a little bit more cohesive picture of things. That being said, like what you watch, like it's not boring. Right. I mean, the weird stuff keeps going on. Like I think he's full of shit, but like he's not half-assing being full of shit. Like he's going all in on, like, I'm just going to load up this boat with guns and drugs and booze. And it's like a mild thumbs up. It's fine. It's entertaining. I don't know if you can make a great movie about him or a great series about him, but I think you could have made a better one. But what's there is entertaining enough. So thumbs up.
Kevin Flynn.
This is not great, but I liked it. I guess I'm going with a very mild thumbs up. You do get thrown into a guy on the run, and it proves my point that rich people get into way more kinds of trouble and elaborate kinds of trouble than poor people do. And as long as you have $100 million because of your stupid antivirus program that I still can't get off my computer, that it affords you the ability to behave badly and to maintain your ability to keep operating in the world. I like what Toby said about it being disjointed. That's how I feel too. I feel like there was a lot of his story's background that was sort of left untouched, but it just seems like there's all this found video that never got properly used. And hey, it's when everybody's in lockdown, why not dust this off and start editing something about Mr. McAfee? So I'm going to go thumbs up, but I wouldn't blame you if you skipped it.
Yeah, I'm thumbs up too. As Toby said, it's not boring. What they didn't do, and I'm glad they didn't do it, was like, John McAfee was a young man who was born in Racine, Wisconsin, and grew up with a, you know what I mean? They didn't do any of that bullshit. They didn't do that thing where they turned this into like a 4-part thing or whatever. They just like dumped you right into the action. It was very much like a frenetic Vice story. And so along in that spirit, it's like, if someone's going to be crazy, why not be super rich crazy? And that's sort of like the ride you're taking on. Mm-hmm. In that spirit, if you're the kind of person, as Laura says, who likes to watch a guy dye his beard a bunch of different colors over a series of a pretty short documentary in which a lot of crazy ass shit happens, you're probably going to like this documentary. It's imperfect, but it's not fun to watch. So I'm going to go ahead and also give it a mild thumbs up. All right, that's going to do it for us. But before we go, Laura Bricker, I have a question for you. Do we have a cat of the week this week?
Oh my God, I am having such a hard time deciding on cat of the week this week.
Pick and one. Laura, commit.
Do it.
I am committing to the cats of Croatia that have been brought to us by Flat Toby's Adventures.
Very nice.
Flat Toby is currently on a world tour. I don't know where Flat Kevin is, but Flat Toby's on his world tour.
And for those who don't know this, Flat Toby is a craft project that Laura invented for the podcast about 3 years ago. And a listener who is anonymous has picked up that craft project and has created a Twitter account with it. And that Twitter account displays pictures of Flat Toby going around the world. Whoever this listener is has a fucking incredible travel life.
Yes, the Flat Toby user outed himself accidentally by tweeting from the wrong account.
Ah, I see.
but I'm not gonna point to.
You're not
who
gonna
he
out
is.
The Twitter user. Okay, yeah.
They did come to Exeter at one point too, because the Flat Toby person rides like a motorcycle, I think, mm-hmm. yep. and they went to the Thirsty Moose in Exeter. But there was like all these great videos of all of these cats, and there was like this video of the cats at the restaurant, and they were walking around, and they were chatting, and of course
the cats were chatting in Croatia.
Yes,
they didn't know they could speak Croatian.
Meow, 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 meow. And I was like, I am always the person on vacation who starts like petting all the cats. And when I was in Key West last fall, like I was petting all the cats. My friend Jen, I was like, Jen. And she's like, I don't touch cats. I don't know.
Yeah. Jen's like, I don't want to get FIV, Laura Bricker. You go ahead and pet all those cats.
Yeah. And I was like, I want all the cats. So I was like, I'm so jealous of Flat Toby with all the cats in Croatia.
By the way, FIV is not something that humans can get from petting cats. That was a joke. Do not at me, no. Cat people.
No.
All right. Laura Bricker, thank you so much for choosing the Cats of Croatia to be Cat of the Week. Kevin, you have to tell me who that user is after we get
me
off this
too.
Thing. All right. Laura Bricker, if folks want to reach out to you and submit their travel adventures and the cats that they see when they are out in the world, how can they find you on Twitter?
They can find me at Laura Bricker.
Of course, you can also email us at crimewriterson@gmail.com with any kind of animal to be the cat of the week, or go into our Facebook group. People submit them there as well. Toby Ball, folks want to reach out to you and, I don't know, show you their flat representations of you and where they are in the world. How can they find you on Twitter?
At Toby Ball NH.
And Kevin Flynn, if someone wants to make a flat Kevin, how can they find you on Twitter?
I'm two-dimensional at Kevin P. Flynn.
And by the way, directions to make a flat Toby are on our website, crimewriterson.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can find me at Reb Lavoy. You can also follow the show on Twitter at crimewriterson. And I encourage you to join our incredible community and our official Crime Writers On Facebook discussion group. Just go to Facebook, look for our regular page, and then hit join the group. We'll let you in if you're not a troll. Support the show at patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia. You get the Crime Writers On After Show, Married with Podcast, Laura Bricker's Leave It to Bricker Podcast, and Toby Ball's Deep Dive Book Club podcasts. Our theme song was composed and performed by Ty Gibbons. Our line editor is the incredibly handsome Olivia Burdett, who is currently studying in Spain.
The Along with John McAfee.
Oh my God, she can go to the morgue!
The executive producer of this program is Kevin P. Flynn. Investigate that for us, Olivia. This show was recorded in the Yoga Loft above the Bodega in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi studio, otherwise known as Studio C, the closet in our New Hampshire basement, where Kevin will fake a heart attack to avoid doing the laundry. On behalf of all the crime writers, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you
later.
Unfortunately, there's this pesky thing called OSHA, so they wouldn't let me go down in the hole, but I got pretty close.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Get down in the hole.
Partners in Crime Media.